The box filled gradually around them over the next half hour. Mr. Weasley kept shaking hands with people who were obviously very important wizards. Percy jumped to his feet so often that he looked as though he was trying to sit on a hedgehog. When Cornelius Fudge, the Minister for Magic himself, arrived, Percy bowed so low that his glasses fell off and shattered. Highly embarrassed, he repaired them with his wand, and thereafter remained in his seat, throwing jealous looks at Harry, whom Cornelius Fudge had greeted like an old friend. They had met before, and Fudge shook Harry's hand in fatherly fashion, asked how he was, and introduced him to the wizards on either side of him.
"Harry Potter, you know,"
he loudly told the Bulgarian minister, who was wearing splendid robes of black velvet trimmed with gold, and didn't seem to understand a word of English.
"Harry Potter! Oh, come on now, you know who he is. The boy who survived you-know-who. You do know who he is."
The Bulgarian wizard suddenly spotted Harry's scar and started gabbling loudly and excitedly, pointing at it.
"Knew we'd get there in the end," said Fudge wearily to Harry. "I'm no great shakes at languages. I need Barty Crouch for this sort of thing. Ah, I see his house elf's saving him a seat. Good job, too. These Bulgarian blighters have been trying to catch all the best places. Ah, and here's Lucius."
Harry, Ron, and Hermione turned quickly. Edging along the second row to three still empty seats right behind Mr. Weasley were none other than Dobby the house elf's old owners, Lucius Malfoy, his son Draco, and a woman Harry supposed must be Draco's mother. Harry and Draco Malfoy had been enemies ever since their very first journey to Hogwarts. A pale boy with a pointed face and white blonde hair, Draco greatly resembled his father. His mother was blonde, too. Tall and slim, she would have been nice-looking if she hadn't been wearing a look that suggested there was a nasty smell under her nose.
"Ah, Fudge," said Mr. Malfoy, holding out his hand as he reached the Minister for Magic. "How are you? I don't think you've met my wife, Narcissa, or our son, Draco."
"How do you do, how do you do?" said Fudge, smiling and bowing to Mrs. Malfoy. "And allow me to introduce you to Mr. Blansk, or Obolonsk. Mr. Well, he's the Bulgarian Minister for Magic, and he can't understand a word I'm saying anyway, so never mind. And let's see who else. You know Arthur Weasley, I dare say?"
It was a tense moment. Mr. Weasley and Mr. Malfoy looked at each other, and Harry vividly recalled the last time that they had come face to face. It had been in Flourish and Blot's bookshop, and they had had a fight. Mr. Malfoy's cold grey eyes swept over Mr. Weasley, and then up and down the row.
"Good Lord, Arthur," he said softly. "What did you have to sell to get seats in the top box? Surely your house wouldn't have fetched this much."
Fudge, who wasn't listening, said, "Lucius has just given a very generous contribution to St. Mungo's Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries, Arthur. He's here as my guest."
How nice," said Mr. Weasley, with a very strained smile. Mr. Malfoy's eyes had returned to Hermione, who went slightly pink, but stared determinedly back at him. Harry knew exactly what was making Mr. Malfoy's lip curl. The Malfoys prided themselves on being pure bloods. In other words, they considered anyone of Muggle descent, like Hermione, second class. However, under the gaze of the Minister for Magic, Mr. Malfoy didn't dare say anything. He nodded sneeringly to Mr. Weasley and continued down the line to his seats. Draco shot Harry, Ron, and Hermione one contemptuous look, then settled himself between his mother and father.
"Slimy gits," Ron muttered, as he, Harry, and Hermione turned to face the pitch again. Next moment, Ludo Bagman had charged into the box.
"Everyone ready?"
he said, his round face gleaming like a great excited Edam.
"Minister, ready to go?"
"Ready when you are, Ludo," said Fudge comfortably.
Ludo whipped out his wand, directed it at his own throat, and said, "Sonorous!" and then spoke over the roar of sound that was now filling the packed stadium. His voice echoed over them, booming into every corner of the stands.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome to the final of the 422nd Quidditch World Cup.
The spectators screamed and clapped. Thousands of flags waved, adding their discordant national anthems to the racket. The huge blackboard opposite them was wiped clear of its last message,
30 Botts every flavour beans, a risk with every mouthful,
and now showed Bulgaria 0, Ireland 0.
And now, without further ado, allow me to introduce the Bulgarian team mascot.
The right-hand side of the stands, which was a solid block of scarlet, roared its approval.
"I wonder what they've brought," said Mr. Weasley, leaning forwards in his seat.
"Ah!" He suddenly whipped off his glasses and polished them hurriedly on his robes. "Vila!"
What a veal!
But 100 vila were now gliding out onto the pitch, and Harry's question was answered for him. Vila were women, the most beautiful women Harry had ever seen, except that they weren't, they couldn't be, human. This puzzled Harry for a moment, while he tried to guess what exactly they could be. What could make their skin shine moon-bright like that, or their white-gold hair fan out behind them without wind? But then the music started, and Harry stopped worrying about them not being human. In fact, he stopped worrying about anything at all. The vila had started to dance, and Harry's mind had gone completely and blissfully blank. All that mattered in the world was that he kept watching the vila, because if they stopped dancing, terrible things would happen. And as the vila danced faster and faster, wild, half-formed thoughts started chasing through Harry's dazed mind. He wanted to do something very impressive, right now. Jumping from the box into the stadium seemed a good idea, but would it be good enough?
"Harry, what are you doing?"
said Hermione's voice from a long way off. The music stopped. Harry blinked. He was standing up, and one of his legs was resting on the wall of the box. Next to him, Ron was frozen in an attitude that looked as though he was about to dive from a springboard. Angry yells were filling the stadium. The crowd didn't want the vila to go. Harry was with them. He would, of course, be supporting Bulgaria, and he wondered vaguely why he had a large green shamrock pinned to his chest. Ron, meanwhile, was absent-mindedly shredding the shamrocks on his hat. Mr. Weasley, smiling slightly, leant over to Ron and tugged the hat out of his hands.
"You'll be wanting that," he said, "once Ireland have had their say."
"Huh?" said Ron, staring open-mouthed at the vila, who had now lined up along one side of the pitch. Hermione made a loud, tutting noise. She reached up and pulled Harry back into his seat. "Honestly," she said.
"And now," roared Ludo Bagman's voice, "kindly put your wands in the air for the Irish national team mascots.